Okay, make sure you get up to theenterprisemission.com. Richard C. Hoagland's got lots to talk about, and he has been updating his website specifically. Also, take a look at the story about the Noble torsion methods over Norway. Take a look at that. Anyway, Gene Cernan, the last man on the moon, says it is critical to go back to the moon for America's future. He's speaking out against President Obama's decision to eliminate the NASA program that would take the U.S. astronauts back to the moon. What has been cut out of NASA's budget, apparently, by the White House, is the Constellation program that would first give the U.S. transportation to and from the International Space Station, then take astronauts to the moon, and then to Mars. The program has already cost $9 billion, and NASA had requested an additional $3 billion each year for the next 5 years to continue it. But the White House says that's old technology, and that the U.S. has already been to the moon. Instead, the president's budget proposes using the $4 billion currently spent on human space exploration to be used for research and development on new technologies and development of space technology in the private sector. Up next, Richard C. Hoagland on Coast to Coast AM. And Richard C. Hoagland's with us, our science advisor, head of the enterprisemission.com, darkmission.net. Richard, got a great story for you. How are you, by the way?
I'm doing fine, although things are a little bit shaky in the space biz these days.
Oh, they sure are. Anyways, a reporter for the LA Times was here tonight doing a feature story, and he said, "Tell me about Richard Hoagland." and he said, I bought his book, Dark Mission. It's great. I really like him. Is he really that way?" And I went, "What way?"
You mean like I tell the truth or try to?
Try to. Try to, that's important, and I know you would if you
could. Does this mean we're going to make it into the LA Times piece?
You just might.
That and Nightline, and, well, I mean, the reason we're all discombobulated tonight is because the two stories that you outlined at the top of the show, the Norway spiral and suddenly the gutting of the space program. Or the apparent gutting.
See, you didn't expect that. I mean, I've got to tell you, last week when we were on, you didn't think that would be cut.
Well, not only did I not think it, but every source who really knew didn't think so either. This is a stunning development, and frankly, that's why I said these two stories, the spiral, and what that really was and is, and this apparent ending of the space program as we have known it for the last, you know, half century. They are intimately connected, and my job tonight in the next 2 hours, minus whatever, is to prove that.
You're going to tie this bizarre spiral into the fact that they've slashed NASA's ability to go back to the moon.
Absolutely.
All
right.
It's
simple. It's so simple, I can tell it to you in one word, and then
don't do that. I've got 2 hours to fill then.
Take open minds. one word, and then we spend 2 hours with me, you know, documenting it.
All right.
Blackmail.
No.
Yes.
Who? How?
Them out there, the secret space program, the same people.
Now explain.
The same people that Joseph Farrell and your guest last night, you know, Rick Dolan, and I have been talking about for years, George. Remember what I said the last time when I was on last week? And I said that you deal every night with a reality that most of the world doesn't acknowledge is real.
True.
And I asked you, how do you seriously sit in that, because you don't sit in the chair, you pace.
I pace.
How do you do that all night, every night, you know, almost 24/7, at least 5 nights a week, and then spend your daytime living in this other world, which is the fake world? It's the made-up world. It's the scripted world. It's the world where we only get to see through the soda straw at what they want us to see. And someone from outside this little nursery, this happy little band of 6 billion people on this planet, and governments armed with nuclear weapons and ready to tear each other's throats out and blow up airplanes and smash buildings and do all that really dumb, idiotic stuff, someone has given us a very blatant wake-up call that seems to have been directed at, among other things, and I will get into the specifics in a few minutes, the current president of the United States, Barack Obama.
You've got to explain this.
And they did this on the eve of his appearance in Oslo, Norway, to accept the Nobel Peace Prize as a deliberate message. Now, that was the model. That was the theory. What I can report tonight and what we have up on the Enterprise.com website is a very lengthy part three of the three-part investigation we've been doing with help of colleagues literally all over the world, some of whom are mentioned in the piece by name. I actually got them to put their names on their work, even though one had some very peculiar things happen, like his house broken into, his computer.
Oh, really? Yes. Interesting. Now, explain first the spiral.
This is in Norway, by the way.
Explain what people think they saw.
Okay, what they saw, what Norwegianers only in a restricted sector of the northwestern part of Norway, which, as you know, arcs up around that part of Europe, kind of covering Sweden and Finland and then butting up into Russia, which is on a peninsula, and then it continues on the other side of that Kola Peninsula. What a few people, and it's really amazing how few there were to see this, to report it, given how many millions of people live in that part of the world, in the pre-dawn darkness of December 9th, in fact, at those latitudes, the sun never rises at this time of year, so it was always pre-dawn, and then it would just get darker. This incredible, bigger than the full moon by some 26 times, according to my calculations, spiral, a blue spiral in perfect, extraordinary geometry appeared about 6 or 7 degrees over the southeastern horizon with this blue corkscrewing beam extending down past the horizon, depending upon whether you had mountains or trees or houses in the way, and it floated across the Norwegian skies very slowly and then disappeared in an amazing phenomenon that looked exactly like the creation of a black hole. And then it dissipated into outer space, just fading away against the pre-dawn darkness, the starry darkness, with only this blue spiral, this corkscrew, extending up toward the heavens, slowly being deformed by upper atmospheric winds until it disappeared after about half an hour.
You've got one of the best pictures up here at enterprisemission.com.
Oh, I got tons of pictures.
And this is of the one I'm looking at, which is right above the Noble Torsion message over Norway. What is the little light that looks like it's on top of the mountain that the beam seems to be connected to? That I find strange. I didn't see that before.
Okay, if you read part two, that is, all right, before I answer that question, let me give the next part of this, and then I'll connect these two dots.
All right.
When this occurred, initially, everybody was flabbergasted. You know, with cell phones now, you can take pictures, so there's a lot of cell phone cameras. There's some good video footage. There's a few time exposures. There's a lot of snapshots taken with, I guess, digital cameras, some high-end. We've got enough data that I was able to put together a team, including someone who's probably listening right now named Greg Ahrens, who lives in Ohio, who's done a yeoman's service in knitting together my contacts in Norway and Russia and taking photographs and stitching them together and doing sight lines and measurements with Google Earth. A humongous amount of effort has gone into documenting what we're going to talk about tonight. So we've got the science down. The immediate reaction was, what in the world? No one's ever seen anything like this before. Then some science guys in Norway on television said, oh, it's got to be a Russian missile test. And lo and behold, it turned out that morning, the Russians had sent out a few days before a NOTAM, which is a notice to aviators, that they wanted to restrict areas around the White Sea, which is kind of to the east of Norway, because that's where they launch some of their missile tests when they have submarine missile tests. And they had a test planned, apparently, for the morning of December 9th, called a Bulova, which is Putin's frontline, best of the, you know, state-of-the-art intercontinental ballistic missile launched from a submarine that can obliterate any American city in 30 minutes. And he was testing it the night before Obama arrives to collect his peace prize. If that isn't a message, I don't know what would be. Anyway, so all the wags, all the pundits said, oh, this has got to be a Russian missile test gone awry, because the Bulova program has had terrible technical success.
But do they make circles like that when they go awry?
Not normally.
I thought they'd go all over the place.
Right? Well, they normally would, because in space, remember, there's nothing to keep you going in the same direction
right.
as you fire
this,
a rocket.
This has got a pattern to it.
So this had an incredible pattern. So, but anyway, the initial wisdom, which quickly swamped all the media attention, you know, here, there, all over the world, was that it was the third stage of this Russian strategic rocket launched from a submarine under the White Sea. And the third stage had malfunctioned, which had, by the way, liquid fuel in it, which has a multi-set of independently targeted warheads. I think 10 of them or something that they can clobber 10 separate targets with one missile.
One missile, yeah.
Nuclear targets. Anyway, the assumption was that something had gone wrong, and this missile had just kind of made a spectacular death spiral across the sky. Well, I can tell you tonight, based on Greg's work and a guy named Tony Spell, I think it's Spell, or Spelling, I'll get the correct pronunciation in a minute, who is a marine engineer in Texas. And as I said, our sources in Norway and sources in Russia, I can tell you categorically tonight, this was not just a failed Russian missile. And here's how I know it. By taking the photographs, which are all throughout part three, and it's described in excruciating detail how we did this, so no one can doubt the science that is there. What my guys were able to do, Greg and others, was to do basically trigonometry and take the photographs from different locations in Norway and actually plot geometric points on Google Maps and pin down within a few miles, you know, like 5-6 miles.
Incredible.
Where this spiral was at every moment in its flight across the Norwegian skies. Now, when you launch a missile, if you're going to reach somewhere on the other side of the world in, 30 minutes, which is the standard warning that we had during the Cold War, you get that missile going up to around 15,000 miles per hour, the warheads. And that's just below orbital speed, which is, is 17,500. So you've got a three-stage missile, two stages fire, okay. You've got a third stage that malfunctions. That means that third stage should be traveling something like between 9 and 12,000 miles per hour, right?
Right.
This thing was moving across the sky at only 200 to 300 miles per hour.
Amazing. I mean, it looks like to me like some kind of a portal or hole.
It was stopped dead. And what we say in part three and what we prove is, yes, it was the Russian Bulova launch, and then something grabbed it, George, like a tractor beam, torsion weapons technology, which we describe in great length in this piece, with links and documents and papers and peer-reviewed. I mean, this is where it all meets the road, because something reached in that pre-dawn, interrupted the Russian missile test, made a mockery of the most sophisticated weapon system that Putin is testing, again, just before Obama arrives in Norway, as a double whammy message to Putin, Medvedev, and Obama, this you need to pay attention to.
Are you saying that this is a new anti-missile system?
It's something, and it can be used in a variety of ways, and it was used that night to basically destroy and make a great demonstration, a kind of an object lesson, of the most sophisticated Russian strategic weapon system they are currently testing. So the message was to them, it was to us, it was to anybody on this planet who has, shall we say, aspirations of going beyond this planet, that somebody has the power, has the technology, and obviously the will to reach into this planetary nursery and make our most advanced weapon systems like they were toast.
That's an amazing theory.
And it's not a theory. The numbers are there. You can't deny the numbers. Something, and you can't do this with magic, something stopped that missile from a 9,000 mile per hour downrange trajectory to where it was moving along slower than a prop plane I used to take between Washington and New York many years ago, the good old Electra.
Is this Tesla technology?
This is Tesla, Scalar, Bearden, Torsion, whatever you want to call it. That's what this is. And it's in someone's hands who is not the United States or the former Soviet Union. That is crucial.
Okay. Now, if it's not the big boys,
no,
who's got it?
Let me cut to the chase, and then we'll come back and we'll fill in the pieces.
All right.
Up until this occurred, there was every indication that Barack Obama was going to basically correct the course for NASA in terms of Constellation.
You would have bet the ranch on that.
Because all our sources were saying exactly the same thing and had inside meetings and conversations and emails. And, I mean, there's a huge database on the record that this was supposed to go down a different way. So what happens? He doesn't say anything about the space program, which everybody's waiting for a year. What's Obama going to do with the space program? Instead, he doesn't put it in the State of the Union. He basically kind of slips it out there between the sheets in the budget, which is, I mean, budgets are boring. Who pays attention to budgets, right?
Yeah.
And Charlie Bolden, who is an ex-Marine general.
Ex-astronaut.
Ex-astronaut, four times. Basically reads a 10-page paper, reads it at the press conference yesterday at NASA headquarters, and then before the press can ask questions, he splits, leaving it to Lori Garver, who's the deputy administrator of NASA, to handle the questions and the teleconference and all that. Today at the National Press Club, he appeared, Bolden did, and gave a defense of what, in fact, if you have grown up on the space program, is indefensible. What's bizarre is what would have changed, what could possibly have changed so that it was taken out of the NASA administrator's hands, who was having all the right meetings, saying all the right things, doing all the right stuff behind the scenes to make this a real space program again that would have all the components that have been missing ever since basically Kennedy was murdered.
Yeah.
And suddenly we are left with half an effort that doesn't have a date, a timetable, a schedule, a plan, a destination.
A goal, nothing.
Nothing. We're just supposed to kind of spend six. Remember, they've increased the NASA budget.
Yes, they have. By what, $6
billion? $6 billion over 5 years, which is not chump change. I mean, everybody's throwing billions and trillions around Washington now like they really understand what it means.
Yeah.
But, you know, $6 billion for NASA, which spends about 0.5% of the federal budget. That means that if you take a dollar out of your wallet and you look at it, with all those Masonic symbols on it, by the way,
mm-hmm.
and you realize that that's the total federal budget, the NASA portion of that would be, if you were to take a scissors and cut a little tiny piece out of one corner. I mean, it's not even noticeable. Yet, it was in this era now. Remember, the president has just announced we're going to have a freeze in what's called discretionary spending, which means everything but, you know, DOD, Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, Homeland Security, those things. NASA falls under discretionary spending, meaning you can spend money on it or you don't have to. In an era of tightening our belt, he was and is increasing the NASA budget in areas that are crucial, and we'll talk about that in the next, you know, 2 hours.
Interesting theories with Richard C. Hoagland. Of course, he says there are no theories. This is fact for Richard. We're back in a moment. Hey, Richard, are you and Robin gearing up for your Conscious Life appearance?
Oh, gosh, yes.
A lot of
everybody
work.
And everybody is coming to the Conscious Life Expo, which we're all going to be there in, what, less than 2 weeks?
Absolutely. I've got the honor of introducing the Lifetime Achievement Award to Zachariah Sitchin, and that's going to be fun at a special luncheon. You've got your own event. Robin's putting on a workshop, isn't she?
Robin has a workshop with multiple very important players. In fact, I think you have a list.
I have a list. As a matter of fact, one of them is going to be on the show next week talking about some new treatments for
Dr. Whalen.
Oh my God,
you're going to love talking to him.
I'm told he is phenomenal.
He's phenomenal. He's working on this cutting-edge LED technology that Robin has become entranced with over the last several years because we've been using it and it works. It's an it's like Star Trek. It's absolutely like that thing that
it really is. That's right. You know what? You're right. He would wave it over people,
yes.
Right?
Yes. Well, Dr. Whalen is going to go into chapter and verse of how NASA and the Navy and a whole bunch of people that are keeping our country safe are dependent on this technology. And if you come to Robin's workshops, and, you know, as I said, there's a listing, you know, there's connections to the expo at Enterprise, there's connections to her website, healthfreedomrights.com. There's connections, I'm sure, at Coast to Coast.
Yes.
You'll have a list of people. If you could, at some point during the evening, maybe read some of those people.
Well, Charles Osmond's the other one. We all know Charles. He's been a guest on the show.
Absolutely.
And
Andrew she has put together. She's running the whole health thing for the expo this year.
Oh, is she really?
Oh, yeah. That's okay. Why I haven't seen her for the last several weeks.
Well, good,
you know,
for her. But she shines when it comes to this.
Well, wait till you see what she has put together and her own research, which is really cutting edge. So this is going to be where, again, rubber meets the road, and a lot of people are going to learn things that are really important. I mean, invasive medicine, 20th century, you know, cut them open and that kind of thing is passé for an awful lot of problems, because this is literally Star Trek technology real right here now, and I have been using it, and I know it works.
And a doctor friend of mine was telling me that some people have what are called mitral valve prolapses.
Yes.
The valve doesn't close all the way. In the old days, they'd go in and have to do surgery, major surgery through the chest and everything. Now, they can go up through the vein in the leg and put a little clip, like a paper clip. It's a special clip on the valve to hold it in place. It's,
yep.
It's incredible.
But even that is invasive. This is a technology that's basically beaming.
That's true.
You know, I mean, this is amazing, and I have been using it, actually. I've been sitting at the computer too long, so, you know, I've been developing some problems with my neck. I've been using it, and it basically makes it all just go away. It's astonishing. It's used in sports medicine. It's used by Rangers and Special Forces. It's used by NASA in the space station, for as long as we have a space station.
Yeah, that's probably cut out of the budget too, right?
It's used, you know, so, yeah, go to Robin's website, healthfreedomrights.com. Or go to Enterprise and click on the link to the expo, which is right at the top of the page, and it will take you to Robin's workshops. And as I said, she has put together an amazing crew, and not one of them is a clunker. I mean, you could just almost throw a dart, you know, blindfolded, and find somebody that would really tell you something you need to know. But, of course, what you really ought to do is go see all of them. And if you don't do that, I understand they have DVDs available, so you can be many places at once. And I would like to see her sessions filled, because A, she deserves it, and B, you'll learn things that you can't learn anywhere else.
Do you want her session filled or your session filled? If you only have one full, just hers. Good
if
for
I
you.
If I could have one, why not her?
All right. That you know what? You've told me everything I need to know. Good for you. Good for you. We want yours full, too, though.
Well, tonight, you're going to hear a lot of what I'm going to talk about, although you have to see the photographs to actually make it worthwhile, and you have to have time to really look at these. And as I said, I'm doing two sessions myself, one on Saturday evening, which is basically now going to be to confront head-on what the hell is going on with Obama and NASA and the space program we should be having.
Are you disappointed with the president?
Well, this is a story in progress, George.
You've been one of his staunchest supporters. You predicted he'd win.
In politics, you're not disappointed. You have to look and see where the action is, what's going on. I know that this is not what the decision was going to be, that there is a missing component. Now, without getting all this story jumbled so people can actually try to follow some kind of a narrative, we have to do this somewhat logically. So I'd like to go back to what happened over Norway and how that feeds into this NASA bizarre non-decision. And fortunately, we got a bit of time tonight, so you know we can do this right. So anyway, we last left our phenomena, and you said one thing I do not want to leave uncorrected. You said, I am absolutely convinced. No, Hoagland is never absolutely convinced of anything. When Hoagland has numbers, Hoagland puts out the numbers and lets people draw their own conclusions. The numbers I have, that if this was a Bulova missile, which every piece of evidence says it was, something took control of it that no technology on this planet is supposed to be able to do.
That we know of.
Well, I'm saying supposed to be able to do in the white world, the public record. and like a tractor beam out of Star Trek, brought this thing to a halt from moving at 9, 10, 12,000 miles an hour to leisurely sailing across Norway's skies at a few hundred.
So
in seconds.
So the missile, anti-missile tests that we've been doing, we just had one failed when we were doing an Iran
simulation. Yeah, hitting one bullet with another bullet.
That's us.
That's us.
You're saying that this one, whatever it is controlled by some black ops program or the shadow government, who knows who.
Or the secret off-world space program. Remember what Dolan said last night, and I quote Dolan extensively and give links to his phenomenal historical research. Remember, Richard Dolan is an historian who got into the UFO thing kind of late because as he was reconstructing the post-war period from World War II through the beginning of the Cold War into, you know, Eisenhower, et cetera, he began noticing these remarkable UFO events in the open literature, in the mainstream, you know, in newspapers, in other records. And he began to see patterns. And then he realized, and that's why his books are called, you know, UFOs, the National Security State, that this is an entire reality that has been closed off to us by edict, by a decision, by a set of decisions behind closed doors. You know, you can't handle the truth. Now, you may be wondering, some of you out there who remember that Enterprise does not do UFOs, why the heck am I talking about Rich Dolan and UFOs tonight? Because they become IFOs, an identified flying object, i.e., it is my strong belief, backed up by a lot of research you'll find in Part 3 of the Enterprise Mission Spiral investigation tonight on the website, it is my firm belief that we're looking at somebody demonstrating an incredible show of force that is not based on this planet, and are not aliens or ETs or little green guys or whatever, but are human beings who have, as Dolan said last night, split off from terrestrial civilization. He called it a breakaway civilization, right?
Yes, he did.
Now, you then have to fast forward the film to what my friend and colleague, Joseph Farrell, who has been doing extraordinary research in this arena for years, trying to reconstruct what happened during the war and after the war. And you have to put together his research with our research, with Dolan's research and a few other people. And then you can come to a big picture kind of what's really going on and where are we as we're closing in on 2012 with just, you know, 2 years and change left now. So let me quote to you a bit from Farrell and what he has put into this piece that has now just been posted. He says that in essence, we have a secret off-world civilization. We are left with some version of my Nazi international extraterritorial state with, in my mind, an all but proven track record of post-war investigation of precisely the technologies that we're discussing. Radical, wild, and woolly, as I think this scenario sounds, it does in my mind rationalize the rather odd signs that I have seen around many things going on right now. So what Joseph is proposing is that the Nazis at the end of World War II didn't go quietly into that good night. We didn't really defeat them. They took their best toys and went somewhere, initially on this planet, and because they've been developing these technologies, which have, among other things, the control of anti-gravity within them, they developed a real space program. And we got bits and pieces, meaning the black ops crowd in the United States and maybe even in Russia. And all three parties have basically been developing, as the 800-pound gorillas, this technology in secret. And there has now been, apparently, a falling out, and somebody is threatening in a major way the two main powers on this planet, the two nation states that we recognize as major powers. And they did it on the same night in the same way that they did with Obama. Now, how can I say that? Well, remember, the same night that the spiral appeared over Norway and shredded this Russian missile, brought it to a halt in midair, which is impossible, again, by any normal physics. They also, whoever this was, poised, floated, hung, casually placed a huge, multi-hundred-foot diameter tetrahedron in the skies over the Kremlin in downtown Moscow. And Russian television, for days afterwards, was broadcasting the video from ostensibly two amateurs driving around, you know, Moscow in the middle of the night, who captured this on some kind of a video camera in their car. When you put all this together, it says a major warning to both powers about something. Now, a few days later, we have a president of the United States who was supposed to propose an aggressive Kennedy-esque type space budget, which would streamline what the previous administration had tried to do that could not afford to do.
Yeah, tell us what you think he was going to say.
I have sources that were absolutely 100% convinced. In fact, the emails went back and forth were, oh, it's, you know, 8.5, it's 9.5, it's 9.9995, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10, right?
Yeah, huge.
Everybody's been shocked by what this, because what's happened, George, is it's missing the other Kennedy-like component. Increasing NASA's budget in a time of budget, you know, restrictions is, A, very anomalous. You would agree, right?
I would agree.
There's a lot of jobs at stake, a lot of high-tech jobs. I wrote a white paper on Enterprise called The New Frontier of Hope, where I basically outlined the kind of space program that this president should consider, going back to what John Kennedy and Jim Webb tried to do 40 years ago, and Kennedy was cut down before it could ever be completed. It looked as if that kind of program, which had monies for an efficient way to go back to the moon, to develop technologies to do all the things in near-Earth space we need to do to create the kind of infrastructure that civilization needs to move out from one planet into the solar system and make use of the stunning resources which are all around us. You know, it's kind of like that old joke about, you know, what do you do when it's raining soup? Turn your umbrella upside down. That is not happening. The part of the budget which is submitted was the R&D part, all the cutting-edge technologies which NASA has literally not done for decades, things that will advance real space propulsion that will finally allow, George, you and me, for the price of, you know, not too steep a ticket, to someday, while we're still kicking, to actually get off this planet and see what it looks like from outer space. That's what Obama was trying to do and is still trying to do in the half of the budget that has been made public.
And what's this discussion about moving things to the private sector to let them do it?
Well, what's been the key problem with NASA going back to as long as you and I have been having this discussion? It's a single source, right?
Yeah.
As long as you have one agency which is in control of rockets, spacecraft, cameras, analysis, downlinks, tracking stations, you know, they own everything, right?
Too much.
How can you possibly, you know, I mean, look, the discussion you have had about ruins on Mars, ruins on the moon, ancient civilization all over the solar system, in any normal situation, I would be able to bring you proof because I'd be able to go to where this stuff exists, take pictures, bring back samples, plunk it down on your desk and say, here, It's real. Can't do that with NASA because they're a sole source. And all the space programs of the world are run by governments, right?
You got it.
If the governments all get together behind a closed door and say, well, we certainly can't let them know this, there's no way, you know, Richard Branson notwithstanding, that you're going to beat them at that game. They have billions and billions and billions, and private enterprise basically has nothing. And NASA sat on all the good stuff anyway in terms of how to do this. What Obama is proposing in this budget, the part that is still going to go forward, is what in one stroke this space program NASA has needed from the get-go, which is a democratization of access to space, that the government actually will now give contracts to every private contractor who can produce a proposal that has a prayer of actually working. They will get money, and the best ideas will flow to the top, and he is essentially trying to create a private space program.
What happens one day when one of these companies launches a rocket, and let's say five companies have the capability, and one of them is armed with some kind of a nuke, and we'll have no idea who's done it, who's doing it. I mean, it's almost as if they're rogue terrorists by themselves, in that you don't have a government to go after anymore.
Well, that's not the way it would go down. Because remember, in order to do this, rockets, by their very nature, cannot be done in your backyard. Certainly any rocket reaching anywhere on the planet.
So you got to have a launch pad. Everyone's going to know where it is.
You've got to have launch pad facilities and all that, and a support structure, ground support equipment, a huge infrastructure. What Obama's proposing is that NASA will lease the launch facilities like they have for you know, communication satellites,
mm-hmm.
to private astronaut launchers, which will be like we did back in the 50s and 60s, convert some of these military rockets that Lockheed Martin and Boeing, for instance, have developed, the Atlas V and the Delta IV Heavy, and they would be converted to launchers for a private spacecraft that would be placed on top and would initially provide shuttle service to and from the Earth to the space station.
All right, so let's say XYZ company decides they're going to send astronauts to Mars.
Well,
what's their motivation to do this?
Well, you and I and everyone listening to the show knows what the motivation is only going to be. Can you imagine, George, if you and I could basically hire Boeing or Lockheed Martin
somebody,
SpaceX or any of these companies, to basically send a mission to the moon, initially a robotic mission, but someday, you know, you and I might be able to go, and we land at Taurus Littro, we pick up Data's head, we bring it back. Can you imagine how much that would be worth?
Yeah, that's
there
true.
Is the ruins of an entire extraterrestrial civilization across the solar system with umpteen incredible dollars worth of scientific knowledge, engineering know-how, energy technologies that will make you drool, the kind of Star Trek stuff for biomed that Robin's just beginning to look at. In other words, if you bring private enterprise into this, if you basically return the space program to Robert Heinlein's vision in that classic book, The Man Who Stole the Moon, which turned into Destination Moon, that 1950s movie.
Oh, it's a classic.
If that's the space program that we should have had back in the 50s, and it got co-opted by political events between the USSR and the United States because of the Cold War, what Obama is trying to do with half of this budget is to return us to where, as one wag said, 1,000 flowers can now bloom. I mean, this is such a Republican space program, you could not believe it, except it's missing the critical component, which is going anywhere.
Back with your phone calls and more with Richard C. Hoagland in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. So, Richard, making an assumption that there is this special program, this Black Ops program, what's the message? What are they trying to convey by intercepting the rocket and by trying to change the space program?
Well, remember, we don't know who's behind this.
Okay.
They are very shadowy players. My feeling is we're looking at what always happens with human beings at some point. They get greedy, and they start fighting among themselves. And we appear to be seeing a factionalization of this. You know, Dolan said it very effectively last night, this breakaway or break-off civilization. If you give a group of people, starting out with their Nazis, the kind of godlike powers that this physics and technology can convey to ordinary people in the way of manipulating matter, energy, anti-gravity, moving objects, you know, even things like beaming and teleportation. I mean, use your imagination. The sky with this physics is not the limit. If you give a group of humans, particularly the humans who had the disposition of the Nazis at the end of World War II, if you give them 60 years without checks or balances or, you know, anybody else telling them what they can and can't do, what in the world could they do now? And do they think they own the solar system and they're intending on keeping us imprisoned? I mean, Alex Jones, you know, in Prison Planet may have got it exactly right. Obama may be acceding to the ultimate form of blackmail. Because in the piece, we go through carefully why there are credible political representatives, including now Russian television, state Russian television, through the voice of Hugo Chavez, accusing someone, the United States is who he's aiming at,
yes,
of using a HARP-like technology to deliberately produce the Haiti catastrophe, to kill outright 200,000 human beings, to maim another 200,000, and to make homeless a million in seconds. What president, if that is on the table, if that's the blackmail, you go into space, you go back to the moon, you let everybody know what's out here, and we will do this to any one of your cities. Ding, ding, ding. What president could possibly responsibly, if he has no defense, accede to that?
All right. Now, what if, let me go off this planet for a second. What if everything you've said is correct, except it's ET technology? And they are doing it.
I don't see it. I really don't. You know, I mean, look, this is another whole evening. This is, we obviously, this is not the first show we're going to do.
This is part two, right?
I don't see it for the one simple reason that it's been status quo ante vis-a-vis aliens, ETs, whatever you want to call them, for the last 60 years. You know, we see ships, we see apparitions, we have lots and lots of reports of people having personal interactions.
Yep. Abductions.
We don't see the kind of global standoff that we're seeing in the last few weeks.
Now, didn't Wernher von Braun warn, and then he say something that was at Kirill Rosen, did he say something about be careful of a false flag one
precisely
day? Yeah.
So if this is a carefully orchestrated setup, remember, the lie is different at every level. Just because you're elected president of the United States, and we have a vivid example in Bill Clinton, how he was frozen out of all the inside stuff, and he stood plaintively in Belfast lighting a Christmas tree at one point, saying that he wished the Air Force would tell him if they'd found a UFO at Roswell.
Hmm.
Remember that?
Yeah.
He read that letter from the kid. Turns out the kid was made up. That was Bill Clinton saying on global television that he was out of the loop as president of the United States. So if you're going to freeze out the good old boy from the South, what about the black guy from Chicago? In other words, I think this is basically designed to craft a public policy that has us doing for the next 40 years what we've been doing for the last 40 years, which is going around and around and around in circles and going nowhere fast. The space station is now being funded through 2020. In fact, there was a meeting in Russia where it was said that the American representative was arguing in the last few days to extend the station to 2028. But it just, you know, it orbits 200 miles above. You're not going to get into any trouble by letting people go to and from 200 miles above the Earth. The problem is if you let them go to the moon.
Now, and they're still going to retire the shuttle this year, aren't they?
The shuttle is being, well, it may actually extend into next spring because of the need to safely conduct these last flights. And there have been some technical problems with some of the stuff that they're putting on the station. But in essence, the shuttle is retiring in the next few months, and we have no means as a country. The United States has no means of sending its own astronauts to its own space station.
That's abominable.
Other than buying, you know, seats from the Russians. Now, Obama had planned
abominable. That's interesting.
A transition here, which up until the budget was released, you know, yesterday, was supposed to carry the rest of the story, as Paul Harvey would say. It was supposed to be a stripped-down, streamlined realignment of shuttle technology into a new heavy-lift launch vehicle. Remember, you can't really go anywhere in space unless you got the rocket. With primitive rockets, unless you got the rocket, you ain't going nowhere. So in addition to this commercialization of launch capability, you know, $6 billion over 5 years to high-end companies like Boeing and Lockheed and the others to develop a private launch system, which basically NASA will then, you know, buy seats on, just like you buy a ticket on Pan Am,
or, exactly.
You know, on a 747. You know, pilots don't design and build their own 747s to fly a few people from coast to coast, right? We have a very sophisticated aerial infrastructure, which is integrally connected now with the American economy, the global economy. We could not have the economy we have unless we had a robust airlines industry. And that all came about because the government didn't make an airline or make airplanes. They basically started the process. Private enterprise took over. Companies decided they could carry people and other things from point A to point B, and the technology kept pace and was pushed by the old NACA, which was a government research organization that developed an awful lot of technology that then the airlines used when they came into their own in the 30s and 40s. That's the model that Obama's going back to. But without this wide base of new fundamental revolutionary space technology, the price of getting from Earth to Earth orbit, which, as Heinlein said, once you're in Earth orbit, you're halfway to anywhere, that price has got to be driven down. It's now, you know, like $10,000, $20,000, $30,000
a pound. Yeah, it's crazy.
You can't do anything economically with tourism, with people. I mean, people don't want to watch astronauts go to Mars. They want to go to Mars themselves. Or if they don't, they want to know someone who did. They might actually want to know someone who went there to basically build a new home, a la opening up the American West. That's our friend from Colorado. The point is that all of that has now been stopped in the middle of this incredible discussion and debate. What the hell is he doing? Because he only gave us half the picture. Well, let me read you something from NASA Administrator Bolden, who said this on Israeli television just a couple days ago. Before I do that, however, I have to also give you a heads up on something that the Secretary of Defense, Robert Gates, said when he was coming back from Pakistan, you know, discussions with the Pakistani government on the prosecution of the Afghan war. In the New York Times a couple days ago, there was a story, a very thorough story, on his meetings and what we're trying to do with getting the Pakistanis to help us with Afghanistan and terrorists and the, you know, the intelligence service of Pakistan, which is actually not our friend, et cetera, et cetera. And he's now on this plane. This is Gates, Secretary of Defense of the United States under the Obama administration. He's headed back to Washington, and the reporter who's writing this trip up, this story, ends the story with this line, his, meaning Gates, final message delivered. He, meaning Gates, relaxed on the 14-hour trip home by watching 7 Days in May, the Cold War-era film about an attempted military coup in the United States.
Interesting.
Now we skip down to General Bolden and what he said. He said, this is now just before the budget is coming out. One of my jobs as NASA administrator is to work in coordination with Secretary of Defense in protection of the planet. One image that changed everyone's attitude toward that, I don't know how many of you saw the Hubble image of the asteroid that impacted the planet Jupiter.
Well, it's on our website, Coast to Coast AM. It's our feature story tonight.
And left a big black spot, and the spot represented several Earths in diameter. This is not this new Hubble image. This is the Hubble image of Jupiter with that scar on the 40th anniversary of Apollo that I said was of incredibly important significance because it meant someone was upping the ante in this secret war. Bolden goes on. The spot represented several Earths in diameter. That got everyone's attention. This is a direct quote now, all the way up to President Obama. Understanding near-Earth objects and things that threaten the planet from outside. I believe this is code. Because you don't leave thousands upon thousands of people who have dedicated their lives to the American space program, both in the agency and in all the contractors, who actually, this is almost like a secular religion with these people. They firmly, fundamentally believe when they get up in the morning and before they go to bed at night that they're doing something for the benefit of all mankind. They're expanding our evolutionary envelope. They're basically taking us out of the nursery where we're so fragilely unprotected, where one cosmic thing could wipe us out. I mean, by putting people in other places in the solar system, we guarantee our descendants will have a solar system. They will have a future. All that tonight has apparently ended because something has happened, and there is a huge amount of discussion behind the scenes as to what it could be, and no one is admitting anything in public. And what I'm trying to do is to lay the dots out for people who listen to this program regularly, George, and the guests you interview, and the stories they have to tell, and the evidence they have to present. And as I said last week, at some point, these two realities have to come together. And I think, I didn't expect it would be this soon, but I think that those realities have merged with whatever has caused a pause, if not a cessation, in active participation by the United States of America in putting human beings in space ever again beyond low Earth orbit. Something is radically important going on.
First time caller, Ron in Los Angeles. You're on with Richard C. Hoagland. Go ahead, Ron.
Thank you, gentlemen. Just wanted to involve myself in the conversation. I personally had my own experience with the spiral. 2007, this happened in a suburb of Los Angeles. And from my own experience, I don't know, like, you could doubt me or whatever, but from my own experience, it was similar to what happened in Norway, except there was a craft that came through the hole. And I saw it disappear into the ground. I really don't know what to make of it. It's been an experience I've been like trying to come to terms with it ever since. But after I saw the Norway spiral on the TV, like I guess it was MSNBC or one of the news channels, I finally had a context with which I can communicate my experience to the public or whoever. And it just I just don't really know what to make of it. Hearing the discussion, it seems like it's like more of a political action, almost like a Phobos type of incident.
Well, you may have seen a test. Richard, is it possible?
I have a letter, which we reprint in part three, from someone else in the southwestern deserts driving between Arizona and San Diego about 10, 12 years ago who saw something eerily similar, including the corkscrew blue beam that literally seemed to write itself in the sky, and I have some comparisons in the piece. You know, this is a physics. The question is, whose control is it under? And are the black ops guys who ostensibly work for the United States, are they part of the problem or part of the solution? Remember, you cannot defeat this technology with conventional bombs and missiles and even lasers. This is literally a godlike technology. It's the kind of stuff that Sitchin talks about in his books.
12th Planet, yep.
It's the kind of stuff that Joseph Farrell has done extraordinary research into its origins and how it actually possibly works, that Tom Bearden has been working on for years, that I've been discussing on this program in an Enterprise for decades, and all of Chapter 2 of Dark Mission is basically a how-to hyperdimensional physics 101. Once you have mastered that technology, which basically tosses everything we think we know about current physics in an ash can and rewrites all the books and produces technology which can basically bring a missile to a stop in seconds from 9,000-plus miles an hour, as was demonstrated over Norway, once you have that capability, nothing can touch you if the other side doesn't have an equal capability or if components of the other side are basically playing their own blackmail game behind the scenes. In other words, who is now basically making demands of this president that you do what we tell you and we'll save your ass? But if you don't, remember, they told me, one of my intel guys told me, that they would rather lose a major American city than give up this technology, this physics. And if it means, making an example of an American city like Port-au-Prince, can you imagine what would happen if Washington or New York or Moscow were attacked by this kind of technology? I mean, in seconds, you wouldn't have hundreds of thousands of people dead, you'd have millions. Millions.
Who are the people?
Again, you have to go back to Joseph Farrell. In fact, you probably need to have Joseph on as a guest to go through this. And if you want me to come, I will, you know, kibitz. But he has worked out the political and technical underpinnings of this scenario, which is that you have an offshoot from the war of geniuses masterminded by Kammler, the general who was in charge of Hitler's black projects there in Czechoslovakia. And they basically got away after the war scot-free. They just disappeared. It's like they just vanished off the face of the earth, which in fact, George, they may have done exactly that.
Maybe they did that. Very possible. Next up, Salem, Oregon. Don, west of the Rockies. Go ahead, Don.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
Hey, Richard. I have three little granddaughters. The oldest one is four. When she comes to visit, she always asks me, Poppy, where's the new astronomy magazine? And I tell them, I said, you guys study hard. Maybe one of these days you'll be astronauts. How far back do you think this puts us in the space program, and I'll listen off the air. Thanks, guys.
All right.
Okay. Well, see, that depends on this audience. What I want tonight to do is to have this audience, the Coast family, the one set of people on this planet that know what the stakes are, know what some of the opposition could be, know what the game has been about. You don't believe everything you see on MSNBC or Fox or CNN. You need to now make your expression, your voices heard with the Obama White House, and with the Congress. You need to find, and on Enterprise, you'll find lists of emails and contact info for both. You need to express your will. Do you want a real space program? You need to say in these letters, in these notes, that you know there's an extraordinary prize out there that someone is trying to keep us from basically acknowledging and inheriting. I mean, this is all about territoriality, George. Remember, these guys think they're the heirs apparent. They are connected.
Self-appointed.
Self-appointed to the gods through bloodlines, through DNA, that hyper-Nazi, you know, obsession with, you know, bloodlines. Well, they think they're connected to the guys that left all the stuff on the moon and Mars and every other place in the solar system that we now can prove it exists. And I'm going to show picture after picture after picture of these stunning ruins that are now available through official NASA sources.
More to come. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. It appears to me, Richard, that George W. Bush's vision for space was a little more aggressive than President Obama's.
Well, the problem with that was it was $9 billion into a black hole. They were never serious, George. The initial proposal that President Bush made in 2004 at NASA headquarters, which then the NASA administrator and a Admiral Steidel began to implement, was the correct approach. It was called the spiral approach, pun intended. Huh. I mean, that writes itself
in
more messages. Just Google spiral approach, Bush space plan, and you'll find 50 million links. And then, you know, the administrator...
It was Sean O'Keefe, wasn't it?
It was Sean O'Keefe. He was fired. Mike Griffin was brought in, and everything went to hell in a handbasket. And everybody thinks it's because Mike has 5 degrees and an ego bigger than Carl Sagan's and that he wouldn't do anything else except it was his way. What he wound up doing was spending $9 billion on a plan that could never have been sustainable with two brand new rockets, hundreds of billions of dollars of expenditure. It was a pipe dream. It was never going to get to the moon. It was an illusion. And I was told this in 2004 by certain intel sources. This is a false portrayal of what we're really trying to do. So now you have a new administration. You've got Obama, and he spends a year working with people to bring sanity so that we can have a space program that really is worthy of the name, which it is in everything except it has no place to go. It has no announced destination,
yeah.
No timetable, no nothing.
No nothing, and it's all technology-based.
Well, the technology is crucial if you're going to democratize space so you and I can go to the moon someday, George, while we're still alive and kicking. Okay?
I would go.
Well, are you kidding? Of course you'd go. You'd broadcast from the moon.
I mean, you and I are on YouTube already on the moon, running all over the place.
Now, so what's going to happen? I mean, science is nothing if it's not prediction. I do not want people to come away from tonight thinking that I'm making 100% solid gold claims about this. This is a set of scenarios that fit the hard evidence. The hard evidence is on Enterprise. The hard evidence behind that is in this secrets presentation I did in Tempe last November, ironically probing the extent to which the Truman administration, the Eisenhower administration, the Kennedy administration, Johnson et al., have been up to their eyebrows in working with or combating this secret space program from its beginnings, which was right after World War II.
What time is your event at the Conscious Life? Because if I'm there, I'll stick my head in there.
You better.
You're
just a few miles away. You better be there. You'll learn
stretch me
things.
All over the place.
Yes, you'll definitely learn some things. It's on Saturday night. Saturday night is the Obama and the sidetracking of the space program, as it's now been renamed. And I'm going to lay out images. I mean, you've seen some of the images from the La Crosse mission, right?
I mean, I'll send Tom in my place.
No, you have to come yourself.
All right, back to the calls. Let's go to West Hartford, Connecticut. Bill, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hey, Bill, go ahead.
Yes. Hi, Richard. It's an honor to talk with you again.
Hi, Bill.
Hi. Let me tell you, a day and a half ago on February 1st, I was nauseated. It was the worst day of my life when I heard Monday about the new non-manned space program. I want to get right to what you just said, La Crosse. I think you should talk to NASA scientist Dr. Anthony Colabretti. I know you know what I'm going to talk about, because it proves scientifically, chemically, what you've been talking about ruins on the moon, because the La Crosse mission, when it slammed at the Cabeus crater, found, and I read this on Aviation Week in Space Technology magazine, which I know you read also, unusual things like metals and organic compounds and other things which Dr. Colabretti wouldn't say he found underneath the ground at that crater.
And my
point is, with the way the sick, violent world is with religious terrorism in Iran, Al-Qaeda, etc., the one thing that could bring our world together is to find out all those things on the moon about what our civilization really has been all about for millennia.
I agree, Bill. Now, let me tell you what I think is going to happen, George.
Go ahead.
This is going to come to a major test. Because, remember, the president only proposes a budget. Who under the Constitution actually is empowered to enact the budget?
Uh-huh.
Congress.
Yes.
There are key chairmen. There's Shelby from Alabama. There's Nelson on the committee from Florida. There's many other congressmen all around the country. They have employees, contractors, districts, NASA centers. There is a huge fight shaping up in Congress who think that Obama is absolutely nuts, and they're not going to stand for this, and they're going to demand that we have a manned space effort going to the moon worthy of the name. Now, if he brings all those guys down to the White House and they come out and say, we agree with the president, you know the fix is in, and you will know.
Okay, I agree with that.
It's something bigger.
Something's happened.
Something bigger than normally allowed in Washington, and that's one of the key tests. Watch what the committees do. Watch how this is debated over the coming weeks and months, and we'll obviously keep you apprised here. But if they suddenly all cave, or another scenario is, as part of these hearings and part of these briefings, if it is revealed what's really at stake and we finally get some, you know, cojones in this country again to stand up to what's been going on for the last 60 years, and we decide we're going to do this anyway, because what Joseph believes, and I now believe along with him, is that the visible war on terror, George, that we're all worried about, that we've been worried about since 2001, that is the terrestrial part of these guys and their big plan to keep us tied in knots so we never have time or peace or, you know, knowledge and certitude to extend our reach and our geopolitical influences beyond this one planet.
Connie in Daytona Beach, Florida. There you go, Connie. You're up with us. Hi,
George.
Hi.
It's a blessing to be able to talk to you. But I have a suspicion and I have a hope. And I think that this spiral thing is wormholes that they're opening up. And the reason why they're closing up NASA is, I'm scared. I'm nervous.
Yeah.
But is to reopen another phase of NASA in another paradigm and take us in into the wormhole, and that's the reason why they've sent all this gas and all these motors. We're not going to need those anymore. We are going into another phase of the creation of life. That's the reason why there's the Mayan calendar stopped when at 2012, because there's no need for time anymore. They're going to be bending time. By the grace of God, they won't mess it up like the guy said with Art Bell the other night. But I mean, I believe with all my heart that they're going to, that we're going into another paradigm, and it's going, and this nation is going to open up, and we're going to have jobs galore with new technologies. This, we don't need the old technology anymore.
I hope you're right. Richard, want to react to that?
Well, the technologies and physics I talk about are capable of the things she's talking about. The question is, who controls them? Do we, 6 billion people, ordinary folks on this planet, count? Do we have people who are fighting for us? Is this war going on upstairs, which Joseph and I now firmly believe could, in fact, have been also responsible for 9/11, George? You have to go and read that part of Part 3.
All right, okay.
The evidence is there. And after you've read it, you and I need to discuss a couple of guests if you want to pursue this further.
Okay.
The physics is there. It's an all about now who is controlling it and what they intend for us.
Next up, we go to Asheville, North Carolina. Jeff, thanks for holding. Go ahead, Jeffrey.
Two things. One, the spiral thing in Norway. I used to live in Cape Canaveral. I lived there for 20-some-odd years. I saw countless things just like this. Every time there was a night launch, if the moon was at the right angle, you would see the same kind of effect. I mean,
Sir, I guarantee you, with all due respect, it's not the same kind of effect. I've seen the same things. I've talked to engineers. I've talked to rocket guys. It's
well, I've seen
similar.
I've seen the pictures of this spiral thing online. I've seen news reports about it. And I'm telling you right now, I've seen this countless times.
Okay, did you ever see one of these missiles stop from moving thousands of miles an hour to basically dead still?
Do you have video of the missile stopping?
Absolutely.
Because you don't see the missile. All you
see is a cloudy-looking spiral. Go read the piece, look at the maps, look at the calculations, look at the layout, and then, you know, send me an email.
Now, I had asked you earlier, Richard, what that light was on the top of the mountain that looked like the beam was going toward
it. It's not on the top of the mountain. It's through a little valley in one of those pictures is looking above the horizon. Remember, the mountains rise up above the horizon. You don't see the horizon. That is the top of the first stage contrail of the missile launch from under the White Sea. First stage, second stage went fine. Then something went radically wrong. All the Russian safety systems, you know, normally you have devices and missiles, they go out of control, you can explode them. They didn't work. Something took control, stopped this thing like a bug on a windshield in mid-flight as a blatant, overwhelming demonstration of sheer raw power, military force.
Next up, Shiloh, Illinois. Hey, James. Go ahead, James.
Hey, how's it going? Thanks for taking my call, George. Richard, I've been listening to you for years, and I've heard you go in different directions, but basically stay around the same topic. I don't have a problem with a lot of the things you say. I actually believe a lot of the stuff is going on. I've seen so many friggin' UFOs, I don't even like to tell the stories anymore to people. Actually, you know, it's just there's no reason to just make them think I'm crazy. And so I've been shadowed by, I guess, what you call UFO spies.
Yeah.
Because I've seen so many of them. And just recently, I actually saw one of the guys, instead of being in a vehicle, he got out and follows me in a dollar store. He tried to act like he wasn't watching me. You know, first I'm thinking FBI or something like that. But then I'm looking at the guy's face, and the guy's like, you know, talk about manicured. I mean, you couldn't even see the little bumps from where after you shave, you know?
Huh.
I mean, you talk about a Men in Black. I guess this is my first Men in Black guy. And anyway, he walks out in the parking lot, and I'm trying to keep an eye on him. He's trying to keep an eye on me, but he's staying in front of me. And he walks out in the parking lot. I'm looking for the vehicle he's going to get in. He walks behind an old junky van, and the guy freaking disappears. So what's your opinion on that? And as well,
what Dolan and Farrell have both said. If you give these guys, human beings, undivided access to this kind of physics and technology for close on 100 years, 60 years, they come out the other side like freaking gods. This is a technology that allows dematerialization. Everything you've seen on Star Trek, this physics can do. Do you understand that? So, yeah, he could have walked behind the van and been beamed up, and this is current science somewhere, just not out in public view on this planet.
Mike in Louisville, Kentucky. Take it away, Mike, a few minutes ago.
Yes, George, nice to speak with you again. I've called before. And also, I want to thank you for offering such a public service with this program. It's information and knowledge that we couldn't get anywhere else.
Of course, thanks.
Mr. Hoagland, I'm a retired physics teacher, but always have an interest in space since I was a kid, so there's a thousand questions I'd love to ask you. But I'd really love to be able to sit down with you and in person, to be honest and swap theories and ideas. But
gotta fly to L.A.
He's going to be L.A. Yes, I'm going to do two of them. One on Saturday night, which is the Obama twist now on do we have a space program or don't we? And then on Monday night at the workshop, which is after the conference, I'm doing it now totally on this spiral, the physics, the relationship with the politics of NASA. Are we going to have a space program? Are we going to go to the moon? So you're going to have 2 days, hours, from 9 to 11 on Saturday night, and I forget what the times are on Monday night, but they're on the schedule.
You take questions during your events,
of
don't
course.
You, sometimes? Sure.
Yeah. Okay. Well, when you do workshops, you basically have a give and take and a kind of a conversation, and you lay out stuff, and people then react to it. And it's very different than being on the radio.
Yes, or meet and greets or something, but I have fun doing.
What I want to do, would like to ask you, if possible, is I've got an idea that we have been in space, for many, many millennia beyond, the early space program that NASA came up with. I think possibly the ancient Atlanteans had developed space flight and escaped this planet.
Well, that has to do with our ancient hidden history, which we're also supposed to not know about.
You're the kind of physics teacher I wanted to have in school, Mike.
Yeah, where were you when I was going to school?
Yeah.
The artifacts that have been spotted, on the moon and things, and of course NASA tried to say that didn't exist, or rock formations, same with Mars, have always intrigued me. Also, I have a theory, and I want to see you throw this at you, Mr. Hoagland, and see what you think. What do you think about the idea that these off-world, possibly human civilizations are living maybe not only beyond our solar system, but right here close by, such as an underground facility on Mars, for example?
They could even be here on Earth.
Very possible.
See, look, if as I lay out with Mike Barra in Dark Mission, the whole history of NASA has been basically a lie. Yes. A lot of stuff that we get on television is real, and it's real data, and it's real science, and it's real exciting, and it's important. But all the good stuff we don't get to see would make the stuff we do get to see look like, a candle flame compared to a hydrogen bomb. And it's the stuff we don't get to see, which someone was trying to leak this past summer during the La Crosse mission. Go to enterprisemission.com. Look at the smoking gun articles. Look at those last images that came out from the official La Crosse project, and tell me that those aren't incredibly destroyed cities on the south pole of the moon photographed by a NASA spaceship.
I tell you, Richard, you've got a brain that just doesn't stop. It's truly remarkable.
It's called science, George. Just follow the dots.
I'll see you in L.A., but in case there's any breaking science stories, we'll talk with you next week.
Read part three. Talk to me, and then let's talk about L.A.
Richard C. Hoagland, EnterpriseMission.com. Just go to enterprisemission.com and read what he's been talking about all night long. Don't forget our program tomorrow. We'll be with Mr. Hadamin, Nassim Hadamin, talking physics. And Dr. Fred Bell joins us on Thursday as we talk about his views of just what's going on this planet right now. And then we're back to Fridays where we'll have open lines for you right here on Coast to Coast AM. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasur, Ross Mitchell, George Knapp, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.